Staying out of trouble?
Summer always gets busier.
Yeah.
Keeps you out of trouble.
Does it get better? See, because I assumed it did because we're more active. We take our dogs with us. You get a cut here. You get a fall here. You get some heat there.
Fish hooks, big time. Kids get out of school, and that's usually going to cause at least a couple of broken legs because the dog gets left out of the pen. It just happens. All the other activities that they're going.
Yeah.
Some heat related things too. Of course.
Well, that was that. I wanted to talk about some of this heat and bugs a little bit. One, this is I think counterintuitive. I'm going to cut my dog's hair so that he stays cooler. Some of that hair is there for a reason, and it's protecting you from heat too.
Yes. Good, clean, well groomed hair coat is actually beneficial. Now, if it's matted or, you know, didn't shed well, that type of thing, needs to come off.
Stops it's not, the circulation, yeah, it's doesn't not, the air circulation.
Not, yeah, it's not working. Not working. But hair actually helps as an insulator, too. Now, sometimes some dogs just don't take care of their hair coat very well. Owners may not have the time to take care of it. In that instance, hey, yeah. Go ahead and take them down.
You know, and another item, because dogs lick themselves so often, that there are some dog breeds that have exceedingly delicate skin in relationship to sun. And I've actually read that you can use sunscreen on dogs, which are another one of those counterintuitive thoughts.
Yeah. Some of the really light coats, you know, dogs have different skin colors just like people have different skin colors. And if you have a really light skin dog, they can actually develop sunburn just like people can, especially
which
if they're
breeds?
Not using.
Yeah, which breeds are more?
Well, for instance, the poodle.
Yeah.
That is a white poodle. Now you get a chocolate poodle. We happen to have one of those. You get a black one. They're going to have darker skin, but you get a white one. They've got real light skin. That's just one. A lot of the little dogs.
I'm kind of curious because you know with a polar bear, they have black skin. Their hair appears white, but it's actually clear. And you know with dogs, I found very often with some of these dogs that beneath that skin is incredibly, I mean, almost translucent, like aged parchment.
Yeah.
Where it is so sensitive. Now, you have a tendency to notice it, I guess, on the belly more often because of the hairless,
sure.
But you have to realize, I guess, it's that way everywhere, right?
Yeah. And it's with our breeds today and so many breeds that are being crossed, there's no rhyme or reason necessarily. You can't say, well, this breed's okay and this breed's not. You know, that a lot of difference just even in one breed.
Did you see this new invention? I don't know if you saw this. It's an alarm that goes off and warns people about the interior temperatures of cars. And it's designed by a bunch of like high school students who designed this. So, you know, there's an alarm that goes off on your car, says it's too hot for you to have a dog or a baby in it. And you know what? This is another one of those things. Dogs and babies don't tolerate this because you know what it turns up to. But I thought that for high school students, I'm thinking, you know what? I have a feeling you guys might make some money on this.
Something to replace common sense, I guess.
Yeah, there's no replacement for that. You and I both know that very well. You know, and here's the other thing. Dogs deal with heat different than humans do. So we think, you know what? It's not so bad. It's about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm going to go for a walk. It's the hottest part of the day, and dogs don't deal with heat on a fundamental level the way humans do. You need to be sensitive to that.
Yeah, they don't sweat. Your dog doesn't perspire. It's all through his mouth, and that panting sometimes just can't quite keep up with it. We invariably, in the summertime, treat dogs that have heat strokes. And they'll come in with temperatures over 110. Those guys are sometimes hard to save, and many times hard to save.
I was getting ready to say that.
Even if you save them, sometimes they are not right.
Oh, yeah?
We've had that happen.
So what it's, you know, often the number when it comes to humans is 104, 105.
Yeah.
I mean, is that the really dreaded number for dogs? Because you and I were talking about different body temperatures.
Yeah, dogs start out higher. So, no, 104, 105 is not a big deal for them. Yeah, they're running a temperature at that. Their temperature runs between 100 and 102 and a half. That's normal dog temperature. Now, some dogs only actually run just a little bit lower. Some run just a little bit higher than that, but that covers most of them. So 103 and a half, that's probably going to be some temperature in any dog. 104 definitely is. But 102 is still in normal range.
Well, here's another one of those. At least I think it is. Oh, he'll be okay. He's got a doghouse. Winter's one thing. Doghouse is totally another in the summer.
Right. You need to have shade, but they need ventilation too. They need to be able to get ventilation. I tell people all the time, summertime, they need plenty of water. Cool water is fine, but they need plenty of water, and you need to almost replace that daily because it really gets warmed up in the daytime. They need to replace it. If you are where you can, it would be nice if you could replace it in the middle of the day. Well, and then shade. That and shade.
Yeah, there's this whole thing, you know, and I've got it pretty bad. Well, if a little's good, a lot must be really good. And when it comes to water, we've always been taught since we were little boys and girls that your animal needs cool, fresh water. The word is cool. You say, well, a little cool water must get, well, let's just put some ice in there.
Yeah. Actually, ice is okay.
Is it?
Yeah, ice is okay. There's a urban legend, out there that ice water causes dogs to bloat, and that's not true. That started back in 10 years ago probably, with the advent of the internet. As you know, a lot of things start with the advent of the internet, and anyone can post anything. That their dog had a serious problem because of drinking water that they had put ice in. Well, it developed bloat, which is a whole other thing, a whole other situation that happens, but it's not because of ice water.
Okay.
Ice water's okay.
That surprised me.
No, ice water's okay.
Well, then we'll talk about ice cream and see where you go with that one in a minute.
A whole different thing.
That's what I kind of thought it might be. You're on the air this morning. How are you? I guess we lost him. Just my luck. We were talking too long.
Maybe they wouldn't know about ice water.
Maybe they did. Well, let's talk about ice cream for a couple of moments. It's interesting because I looked this up on the internet, and all these people asking on these vet sites, you know, I'm at Dairy Queen. I'm at so-and-so, so-and-so. Can I feed my just a little lick?
Well, two things there. One is, of course, calories. The other one is dogs don't handle sugars real well. We don't realize that we have particular enzymes in our saliva, in our mouth, to start breaking down sugars.
Yeah, immediately. Dogs, the glucose.
Dogs don't have that.
Really?
And that's why any type of sugar, and ice cream is good because it's got a lot of sugar, any type of sugar in there is going to cause dogs cavities, which dogs don't have a lot of cavities. You know, if they eat their stuff and do fine, they don't have a whole lot of just tooth decay like we do, if they're taken care of.
You know, that's why I love talking to you.
It's the sugar.
That's never the way I would have thought. I would have thought that totally. Of course, you talked about the calories, but the cold, cavities is not where I thought we'd end up. Good morning. How are you today?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you?
Good, good, good. What's your name? First name?
Brittany.
Hi, Britt. Brittany, what's your question for Dr. Ryan today?
Yeah, well, I can have a million. It's kind of in-depth, but anyway, a couple months ago, my dog, he's 5 years old, was diagnosed with congestive heart failure, and then 2 weeks later, he started developing intervertebral disc disease. So we did the laser therapy and the steroids, and he's since been walking a little better, but he's still incessantly licking his leg, like almost like there's nerve damage.
All right, front leg or back legs?
The front right leg he incessantly licks, and he had started biting the back left leg.
And you think this is related to the disc?
Yes, I do, because before we started the laser therapy, he couldn't walk straight. He was falling over. We started about 2 weeks with the laser therapy and the steroids, and he's since been doing better. He's still licking a lot, and I do think that there's permanent nerve damage in his right leg. But my question is, with the congestive heart failure, we're giving him steroids, so that's not really productive for his congestive heart failure. Are there any supplements or vitamins that I can take that can help either the congestive heart failure or the intervertebral disc disease that you would recommend?
Oh, yeah. Good questions. A whole bunch of questions in there and a whole bunch of whole bunch of answers. First of all, you may be right on. We could have had some permanent damage from the disc problem. We can't talk to our pets, and so they get a little tingle. Of course, they're going to lick. They can't tell you, I can use my leg, but it feels like it's asleep all the time. You know,
right.
That's something people would be able to relate to their physician or to their neurologist, but dog can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
The licking is distinctly possible that it's related to that. To answer your other questions, yes, there are several drugs for congestive heart failure. Some new ones that are very good that do help. There's benazepril, there's vetmedin, there's spironolactone. There's all kinds of drugs that do specific things. Some increase mm-hmm. the heart's contractility, some decrease the rate so that you get a stronger heartbeat, some remove the fluid if you're starting to get a little congestion and some coughing. They'll remove the fluid in the lungs.
Because Britt is having a problem with her dog coughing, too, from the congestive heart failure,
yeah.
So
right.
A diuretic to get rid of the fluid around the pericardium.
Spironolactone is a good one because it also has some good side effects for congestive heart failure.
But right now he's on about 4 or 5 different medicines twice a day.
Okay. Well, you're probably on several of those.
Right.
Along your steroid is working against you on the congestive heart
mm-hmm.
failure, and you're right. Have you tried any of the new NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, to maybe do the same thing that the steroids were doing?
Without messing with the congestive?
Yeah, they're not going to have problems with the congestive heart failure. And if you haven't, right. You might ask your veterinarian about those. There's several very good ones out there.
All right, which ones would she ask her vet about?
Prevacox, Deramax, Carprofen, which is Remedil, and the big dog or little dog?
He's small. He's a Shih Tzu. He's about 14 pounds almost.
Okay. There's a liquid that's meloxicam. It's called Medicam. Comes in a honey-flavored liquid that's real easy to dose when you get to the smaller dogs. That would be a good one. And they all work equally well, just some work better on one animal than the other. So sometimes you might have to try one and say, well, that's not as good as we thought with it. Now, there's a washout period whenever you're on steroids and
mm-hmm.
It's a long explanation, but just say that you can't be on steroids and the NSAIDs at the same time because they
mm-hmm.
do something in the gut. So you have to have a washout period. So you're going to have a period of time that you got to go from one to another. That
right.
might be a time that you could use a drug like Tramadol, which doesn't have to have a washout period and will help with the. It's a very mild opioid. And
help with some of the pain.
Help with some of the pain if there's some pain still associated there. So
okay.
Yeah, there's some ways you can go that I think could help.
All right.
Okay.
Did we help a little bit? Okay.
Yes,
thanks,
man. Helpful.
You have a good day.
Thank you.
All right, bye. You're on the air with Dr. Gordon Ryan this morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Tom. This is Stephen again.
Hi, Stephen Combs. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Glad to hear the doctor. I had a question. We have a beautiful black lab. We have him shaved down, you know, once or twice a year, probably twice a year. He has
apparently,
well,
Stephen's
should,
right
should,
near an emergency
well,
here.
Oh,
hold on a second, Stephen. We were having just a bit of a problem hearing you because of the fire engine there, so you want to start again for us?
Yeah. Our dog, we have him shaved a couple of times a year. But he has very clean coat. We also shampoo him, you know. And I was listening to the doctor say that the coat, if it's nice and clean, is probably better not to cut it. Is that correct?
See, that's that counterintuitive part I was telling you about, Doc.
That's true. If your coat does well. Now, it depends on how thick it gets and all that. But if your coat's doing well, usually it's going to act as a little bit of an insulator for you. It kind of keeps some of that away. I've got a black lab too, and I wash her, bathe her occasionally. She swims so much if I get anywhere near water that you don't have to do that too often. But we don't trim her.
Some breeds have two coats, not the case for labs. They have one
lab
coat?
Lab has kind of an undercoat.
Do they? Okay.
But they have guard hairs, too. That undercoat will get heavier in the wintertime, and that's the part that may not get shedded well. It needs to come out, you know. But if you're doing a good brushing and cleaning her up good, you're probably doing everything you need to.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he does shed a lot.
Or him.
But, you know, that's why we've had him cut.
Yes. Yes, they do shed a lot.
Yeah.
And that does help on that instance, yes.
Yeah, it does. Okay. It doesn't mean you don't have to cut the hair between the toes every once in a while either, too, there, Stephen.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. You have a good day. See, and that's what I was telling you. If I cut my hair, you know, I'll be cooler. Well, like I said, dogs are different, and that's part of the problem we have here. Hey, good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing very well this morning, Tom. How are you?
Good, good. Ron, is that you?
Yes.
Thought I recognized your voice. What have you got for Dr. Combs this morning?
Is it okay to give your dogs ice and ice water?
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit. Yes, it is. There's an urban legend out there that says it causes bloat. And it's not really true. It's a case where one particular case happened to have something with it, and it went viral on the internet. I tell owners all the time when they come in, whatever I'm doing. Of course, I do a lot of orthopedics, so I'm talking about knees or talking about hips or whatever. I said, go online, read all you want to, but whenever you see something that doesn't fit, call me and ask, because anybody can put anything on the internet, as you well know, and it doesn't have to be true or have any science behind it. So it gets on there, and it's well-meaning. You know, someone has a particular problem, and they assume condition A had to be associated with condition B, and it was totally coincidental that the two happened to be together in that one dog. It does not happen. So, yeah, it's okay. Yeah.
Okay.
We have always given our animals ice water and ice, and our dogs, they eat the ice like pig eating coal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, chewing it up.
Some of them just love it. Yeah.
Well, you get the chewing and the mouthfeel, I would think, and then the cool in your main respiratory area. I would think there's a lot of appealing things there for a dog. Hey, Ron, thanks for calling.
All right, guys. Have a good day.
Hey, Doc, before we wrap up, I want to do this with you today. How can you tell? Okay? How can you tell your dog's under heat stress?
Well, the quickest way and surest way would be if you got a thermometer to take temperature. Okay? The signs other than that, disorientation, maybe staggering, dogs just panting and just...
Sometimes to the point of foaming at the mouth?
Yeah, and they're just can't seem to catch up with the panting.
Labored, we'll call it, right?
Yeah, probably a good word, yeah. That would be overt signs. You can lay your hand on them. I mean, you can tell. You lay your hand on a dog, they come in, they're 110. I know they're 110 for every stick of thermometer in them. I mean,
all right. When you say you touch them, where do you touch?
Underneath the white groin area.
In the thigh?
Yeah, because you're going to be hairless there.
Now, and I've also noticed it's a good place to take a good quick check of the pulse, too, in relationship to the heat. Because
femoral
you can feel
right
and the femoral artery at the same time.
That's right there.
Okay, you'd rather play another game of how can you tell? How can you tell if your dog has been bitten by a tick that carries a disease, and you need to be going to the vet? How can you tell?
You cannot. You cannot tell. There's no. In people with Lyme, you get the circle deal. Dogs, you're not going to see it. With all the hair, you're not going to see it. Lyme is actually occurring in this area now. It's the least common of some of the rickettsial things that are carried. We see lots of cases of one of the rickettsial things called Ehrlichia. That's carried by ticks. And, Tom, some of them are bitten by it. They even develop a bit of a titer, and they show absolutely no symptoms and have no symptoms. Others have the blood loss, the whole nine yards. So the same tick could bite two dogs, and one of them develop the problem and the other one not develop the problem. Both of them could potentially test positive, which creates a dilemma for us. You come in, you catch one. If it's positive, which one do you treat? You don't know. The dog's, this one's healthy. This one's healthy. This one's going to get sick, but you don't know which one's going to get sick. So, yeah, actually, it was nice because you could treat them both with this, either one of them, and no side effects.
Major pet stores have announced in this country that by the end of this year, the Chinese pet products and Chinese foods are going to be off the shelf. Petco among them. We're no longer going to sell Chinese-made dog treats because the number of reports. A dog has something bad to eat. Maybe it's a treat, or maybe they got into the garbage. How can you tell your dog has ingested something that is dangerous and you need to go to the vet? How do you know? How can you tell?
Okay, vomiting, uncontrollable, diarrhea, you need to be getting on that. I mean, there's something that's poisonous or at least toxic to them. Okay, that would probably be the easiest symptom. Any of the other sick dog things, you know, owners come in all the time and they know their pet and they'll say something's just not right. And it takes me blood work to find because the dog on all parameters checks out normal. But if you know something's going on, it's at least worth a phone call. Most people, we talk to people all the time that don't end up coming in because you go, well, okay, here, try this, or it sounds like this is what's going on. But for ingestion, it's going to be a GI thing probably, and you're going to get vomiting and diarrhea. If you get pale color, that's even worse. You know, you're getting really into a serious situation there.
Okay, what do you think when it comes to this year? You know, Dr. Gordon Ryan's joining us from the Central Animal Hospital. And here's the thing, Doc. I was thinking, you know, we had a really harsh winter. There'll be less fleas and ticks this year. Yeah. See, that's another one of those. Yeah. No, if nothing else, there's just as many, and they're a great deal more hungry. You know, your best protection from, Doc, is use a combination of flea tick collars or some of these neat new drugs where you eat the pill once a month. I mean, what's
probably the best flea control is one of those. It was Confortis. It's now in with heartworm medicine called Trifexis. It does an excellent job on fleas. Has some, no claim on the label, but has some effect on ticks. One of the things that works very well on ticks is it's called a Prevent Tick Collar. Actually lasts about 3 months and doesn't do anything for fleas. Makes no claim for fleas, but does a very good job on ticks. There are so many products. I'll tell a story on myself. There's so many products that I've asked my practice manager. We have a long brochure taped on the wall so I can figure out each one because I can't remember all of them. There are so many new products out there. A lot of them have the same ingredient in them, but they a new name and
but
they're,
but
they're
others don't, Doc. Up. And here's one I picked up from you. Hey, well, I'll just pick these flea collars up and I'll buy a group of them and I'll use the same one on the dog that I use on the cat.
Oh, no, don't do that. Definitely not the dog and the cat because there's a couple of them out there that if you use that product on the cat, it is extremely toxic. I mean, they will be seeing the veterinarian if you're lucky that they make it.
Yeah. So many people think, well, if I can eat it, the dog must eat it, right? Yeah. And if the dog can eat it, I can eat it. Yeah. Apparently, from some of these dog treats, we learned that there were a lot of people getting sick from eating dog stuff they'd bought from whatever store. You saw that too. Yeah. People, you know, whatever it is they're eating. But here's one that you talked about, sweeteners, sugar. That there are some artificial sweeteners in some products that are literally deadly. And you think, yes. You know what, I'm going to spit this an unsweetened, artificially sweetened gum out, and the dog picks it up.
Half a stick will kill a dog.
Half a stick's what I read to.
Half a stick will kill a
surprise.
25-pound dog.
What
half a stick
it?
Kill a 25-pound dog.
What was the sweetener in it?
Oh, man.
I mean, senior
moment.
Yeah, well, I think there's two of us here being seniors. So, I mean, the idea being that these no sugar gums, but they've got sweetness.
I think it's sorbitol.
Sorbitol?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And we're talking about just wreaks havoc on the kidneys, apparently.
It absolutely will kill the pets. And it causes extremely low blood sugars, too. I mean, they just drop off the charts. They come in comatose,
yeah,
and it doesn't take much at all. Yeah, your sugar-free gum is not good for your pet.
Yeah, and I would assume that sweetener is in some other products too, besides just gum.
Yeah.
Just get an idea that when we find something new, we spread it around. And Dr. Gordon Ryan is very specific with me on more than one occasion. People food is for people. Dog food is for dogs.
There's good reasons for that.
I know. Dr. Gordon Rhyme, Central Animal Hospital. So good to see you, Doc.
Thank you, Tom.